4 o'clock, we'll go ahead and get started. The page that Superintendent handed to you is the newest copy of the proposed inclusion statement. Do you want to explain what changes you briefly made to it?
Yeah, so you all received, I believe, a message from an individual who's a lawyer, you know, questioning whether legally we need to have a policy or risk that it creates for the district. I shared that with our legal counsel, and they said, no, if we're not creating a policy, we're just creating a statement that reiterates existing state statute, state board rule, then no, there's no legal risk there. There was one reference that we had that had changed. Our first draft, for those of you that have your old hard copy, I think the second bullet mentioned R277515. That board rule was repealed and replaced by 217. So we still have the correct references. We just removed one that was out of date. And then the second bullet on your current draft that I just gave you is new. That's, 328 was the one that replaced it. The R277217, that's one that I added. That's an existing board rule, but that wasn't included in the first draft. Everything else that is in black is something that was there previously. And I did work a little bit based on the feedback from our last meeting. We put that sentence in red down at the bottom of the paragraph to the building principals and staff. We'll work together to address individual concerns and questions regarding these expectations. And then the potential, if there are any questions or restrictions on elementary schools, that's down at the top of the second page, so on the back of the page that you have. So we have reviewed this. I spent some time this afternoon on the phone with Ben Rasmussen, who's one of the directors of policy down at the state board, just reviewing which elements of state board rule and state code apply to this discussion. So we make sure that we're referencing those. In our emails with legal counsel, just making sure that they're comfortable with the language that we're using and they have no concerns. So that's, from those perspectives, there are no concerns with anything that we've been discussing. We're on solid ground with it.
So with our hope in this work session, and as Ann pointed out, we don't have a whole lot of time, but what we'd like to move beyond last week's draft statement to come up, hopefully, with a statement then that we can take into regular board meeting if we get to that point and have as an action item. And so hopefully with us together today, we can come to a decision, basically. I think all of you recognize that we've got a lot of other things in the school district and in our future that are important that we need to deal with. I'm not minimizing the importance of this, but we've got a lot of things that we need to be spending time on. And so my personal hope is that we can get to a point where we're all comfortable with the statement, then take it to the board, share it in a public forum, and then move on in discussions with the superintendent. I know there are things in the pipeline with Utah State and other things related to student achievement that I'd love to spend more time on. So I don't know who wants to start.
I'd like to just have a discussion.
That's fine.
Not have everybody having to share our opinions, but just maybe kind of answer some questions. What would change if we made this a policy instead of a statement?
It depends on what we were to land on. If the final draft, for example, if the approved policy had restrictions on the elementary level, then it would simply, a couple things, we would remove some of the language in that last paragraph with not recommended, we would make that more explicit language. If we made it a policy, we would just then be in the position of asking the questions, okay, where do the limits of allowance of a symbol lie? odds are, I mean, we'll get questions on either side, whether it's a policy or a statement. So I think it depends. The main thing I see is not so much a change in our practice, but potentially changes in how individuals who might disagree with it would approach communicating disagreement. Does, if a policy is put in place and someone feels the policy is not explicit enough or doesn't cover enough, does that result in advocacy to add to the policy or to make it more restrictive and add components? Now, if we were to go down that direction, we'd probably spend a little more time to make sure that we've covered those bases and work with our legal counsel to make sure that we've kind of closed some of those doors.
Does this statement in your feelings, with having talked with our staff, does this, I mean, one of the cries we've got is from our teachers to help us with being, there's a sense, I guess, that this kind of concern out there is causing them to have to be real careful of what they say, how they approach things, and looking for some way to kind of have the board stand behind them saying, no, you can't do that, or yes, you can do that. And do you feel like this kind of approach is answering their cry for help?
The teachers who I'm, as I talk to our LEA leadership and I ask them for their thoughts, they're comfortable with this direction, with the training. This statement in isolation, not quite, but in board book you have some of the questions we talked about that we can train principals on. How do you use these with a teacher when there is a question of whether something potentially crosses the line? All right, let's hear the questions that allow us to talk about that and identify it and say, all right, well maybe what we're communicating here is a little more than what is allowed in state law, so let's pull it back.
And they feel like it's acceptable with us showing our support and that we trust them to make the right decisions between them and the principal to work on situations. And that's something I'm concerned about. I don't want to take what should be a board responsibility, throw it back on a principal and say, deal with this problem, you know, because we don't want it.
Right.
It's a no-win situation, so you got it.
And that's a great question to ask. As we've had the discussions with the staff that I have visited with, if the message is the guidance is in the law and is in the state board rule, so we believe that provides sufficient direction to allow teachers and principals to identify what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. Now, here's how we're going to support you in providing training and discussion with you, so we help you with that process.
So they have background.
Right, so they've got background and the thought process to fall back on, and it's not the board saying, well, we don't want to deal with it, so you deal with it. The board is dealing with it by saying, the law is clear, the State Board of Education has made it clear, we're saying, we believe that's clear, and now we're going to make sure that we provide ongoing training to staff to help with that decision-making process so we don't get in situations where someone is crossing the line into, you know, advocacy as opposed to something that would be allowed.
Thank you.
You know, the notes in board book I thought were very helpful in terms of talking about the training issues and identifying for our teachers and administrators the rationale behind the statement. Steps to promote educator agency, what this guidance does and does not require. And I think we've all, I think, discussed and would agree that the training of our teachers and our staff needs to be timely and continuous, ongoing. It's not like the first day of school and we all meet together and you've got this checklist of 20 things as a teacher you need to do. I would like to see us, and I think that's the direction the superintendent needs. Leadership team have gone to spend a little bit more time with this because of the nature of the topic. You know, we all got the email from a teacher at Hillcrest who was directly involved in this. And I thought she made some very good points from her perspective. And her perspective was it was in response to a student need. I get a little bit, what's the correct term? Indoctrination has been used rather loosely by some within our community. And by no means do I think we have any teachers indoctrinating students. We already have policies in place, board rules, state statute, that if that's going on, we have means to deal with it and would deal with it. That's where I'm at.
So I'm a little confused on exactly when this happened.
I could use Greg's word from last week. I'm a little disappointed in us
because we have let this become an issue. And somebody said that this happened 2 years ago, but I thought it was the first of the semester this year.
So I
read someplace that you approved it. So I'm a little confused by what we're dealing with here, but I'm actually reading what you just quoted last night there. Sent me the other way. Because I am disappointed in us for taking so much time for such a minority. And I want to say that with all due respect, because I just came from interviewing students at Bridgeland for the past 3 hours, which are for scholarships for university. We had African Americans, we had Hawaiians, Caucasians, single mothers. There isn't one of those students that is more or less important than the other one as we listen to their stories, evaluate their qualifications. I've got 7 grandchildren in Cache and Oregon City School Districts. And while to me personally they are the best kids on earth, there isn't one of those that is any better or any worse than any other student in our school districts. And to me, that's the way we should be treating this situation between our students. The message that came from the teachers was that they made these actions on behalf of one person, one student. And that one student is as important as any other student, but not more important than the other 24 that could be impacted or affected. And so I've gone through the stacks of emails that we've received on both sides over the past 6 weeks. I've looked at psychology reports, statistics that continue to improve and not improve. And even in this statement that we're trying to accept or not accept, we have indicated multiple possible interpretations. And it doesn't have anything to do with trusting our teachers or trusting our administrators. This doesn't have much to do with the core curriculum that we're supposed to be teaching our students. We are not to be teaching sex education, gender diversification, any of those kinds of topics. So why are we allowing this to be taking so much time for us? The ones that we saw last night talking about which of these 15 symbols are you okay going ahead and allowing? They're no different than the one symbol that was put up. Which how would we clarify? Which one?
Is it an email?
Or neighbor?
Okay.
An email.
Okay.
So I think we either need to be more specific and direct it towards a policy, or again, I'm pretty adamant that I don't think we should be
allowing this at the elementary age level. And at the older levels, the administration is who gets the most direction from you, Frank, and from Jeff, and from Liz, all of our training capacity. And I think that's where that dual relationship happens, is with the principal and the teacher, when something may come up that needs to be discussed before it is ever allowed or allowed. I've toured the Ellis School over the last 2 weeks. I've gone through the Adams School twice. Yesterday with community council and did a celebration. And I see our positive statements for every child. And our classrooms are safe for every child as we currently teach and instruct our children. I think I mentioned that I had a meeting with Larry Burr, Jimmy Berman from United Way. And these are 3 of the 18 posters that he delivered to me today that we're seeing around the community. They are positive statements for every person, every child. There is nothing that differentiates that statement over one child versus another, or one person. And I don't think neutrality is the correct word, because people are not taking that properly. But I think that's the approach we should be utilizing, is why open a Pandora's box, if you will, for all kinds of different symbols that could come on even, because they're interpreted differently here than they are over here. I just had a major pullback on, as I've studied all of these materials up to last night, and met with United Way about these statements, because I just see, even walking down this hallway, we see positive statements that include every student. Doesn't matter their diversity, every child is treated or to be treated the same. I think we need to go back and just say we have a core curriculum, and that's where our focus should be. And those are just my thoughts. I brought this from my best collection.
From your best collection.
With all due respect, because the biggest problem we have in our world right now in society is that we are creating complexity instead of simplicity. Children be children. Let our students come to school involved and safe, but not at complexity that we should. As of last night, those were my personal feelings.
So let me see if I make sure I understand where you are, Freddie. You're saying that we probably ought to come through with a policy. And in this policy specifically, outline what is acceptable to be displayed in a classroom and what is not.
That's, with all of the discussion that we've had over the last 2 months, that's to me what it comes to, is we've got misunderstanding, miscommunication, or not even miscommunication, but the fact that interpretation is not ever going to be the same for you versus me. We all see things.
Well, we do see things the same way. So you and me,
we're yeah, good
example.
Boy, we come
poor me.
Yeah, and our ukuleles.
See, and I think that's one reason why we haven't moved on. In first we just listened, thinking perhaps the statement came out from administration, worked with principals. Basically, as Christy said once, well, didn't it get solved? But because we kept having people coming to board meeting, it was determined the board needs to respond to this.
Yeah.
And I think one reason that the board has not come out with a statement or a policy is because the five of us don't agree on where we should be. And, you know, I think that's one of the challenges.
That's okay, because not all by the rest are always going to.
No, but we do have to have a majority one way or the other. And as a board, we've usually tried, over the years I've been on the board, we've tried pretty hard. If it's going to be a, we don't know where we're going to land on this, we usually haven't brought it to the board.
This is my fear, is that these types of divisive situations, social issues in the world out there, not only are going to divide our community, which we're seeing, but it's going to divide us. And we've always wanted to be pretty unified, and we have been able to do that. We've been able to, hey, I can accept that, and I can accept that. Okay, well, let's do this, and everybody's been able to work something out. And I hate to see that coming amongst us, because when we get through, the parents at these schools have got to come back together. They may have disagreed on this issue, but for the goodness of our school, of our children, of their education, they got to come back and focus on the most important thing, and that is that we're doing the very best job for this child that you put in our school. You've trusted us with your money and your children, the two greatest treasures in your life. And we got to do a decent job with that, and we can't do it without your help.
Which
you got to be unified in supporting what we're doing, and if we can't gain that support back from all parts of our community, we've got a problem, and I don't know how to deal with it.
So I would ask Christy if a general statement or a policy.
She's always
clarifying questions.
From the minute this started, I've been leaning towards policy. I haven't changed my opinion about that, just because I see the future and I feel like that we need to be ahead of the eight ball. We really need to have something in policy for the future. I mean, just like I said before, had we had a policy 10 years ago, we wouldn't be sitting, the conversation would be different right now. So I believe that we need to have a policy, and I haven't changed my position on that. And I don't know. I haven't ever said, you know, what the policy would entail. I mean, we definitely need to come up with a policy that is very, in my opinion, this is a perfect starting point because it bases it on code and rule from the state board. So I think this is a perfect place to start, but I do believe that we have to formulate some policy. I've had several conversations with teachers. Did you want me to talk right now?
Sure.
I've had several conversations with groups of teachers who are doing exactly what Greg has said. It's dividing our staff. It is dividing our staff, and it's making it difficult for our staff to be able to teach children because they're so divided. And I think it's critical, as I've thought about it, is that Hillcrest is, you know, my kids went to Hillcrest, and when my kids came up to Hillcrest, it was under extreme duress. We were labeled poor, stupid, and Hispanic. All three of those. So when we came up to here, we had three labels immediately placed on our foreheads that said, you're poor, you're stupid, and you're Hispanic. So I have no problem usually expressing my opinion. And at a community meeting the board had, Anne was there, and I said, one, obviously I'm not Hispanic, and if I were Hispanic, shame on you for not wanting to educate Hispanic children. So that's a problem. Two, next meeting we have, let's all bring our tax returns, and I'll compare my tax return to yours. And let's compare our students' grades, because my kids aren't stupid. So I've understood and know that stigma sometimes comes with populations. And Hillcrest, bless their hearts, we triumphed over that, and we got beyond that. And Hillcrest, we became part of Hillcrest. And Hillcrest is an amazing community of love and support and caring parents. It's not the same in every single school. And these groups of teachers that I've been talking to are like, Christy, you're assuming that, just like you said, Larry, I would talk to my kids about that. They're saying they don't have parents to talk to. There's nobody in their life that has a chance to talk to them about a symbol being displayed in their classroom. They're coming from homes where they don't have parents. They're living with their grandparents. They're starving when they come to school. They've worn the same shirt for 2 weeks. They're living in a car. I know someone that's living in the, actually, I probably shouldn't say this, living in, I'm not going to say it, living in a place where they probably shouldn't be living, in their car. Students come to our situations, into our schools, in a myriad of problems and issues. And they're saying, if you add this to our plates, it's going to make it more difficult for us to be able to educate children, because we need to focus on their basic fundamental needs by educating them, and it's not our responsibility to add that one more thing to an already tough situation where these kids don't have a parent to talk to. They don't have a role model in their life.
And just in response to that, when this first started, I asked the teacher involved, how many of your students have asked about the symbol? Zero. It's not an issue for the students.
Well, it depends.
Probably true.
No, just let me finish. It's not the students saying to the teacher, what does this mean? The teacher was in response to a need of a student. You know, I'll respectively disagree with a lot of people, and I want to do that respectfully. But just a couple of things, equality versus equity. Not everybody has in this life the same needs and the same skills and the same abilities. Every teacher has to deal with a classroom full of students that change every single day in terms of their needs. Academically, socially, emotionally. I lived it for 36 years. One student could get by with this level of support academically. Another student needed this. That's equity. I can't say everybody's going to get the same level and benefit the same way from academic support or emotional support. My experience in life and core values say we may have some students, for reasons not of their choosing, that need more support to feel like they're up with everybody else and that they belong. And I've got a lot of good friends my age, in their 60s, that are dealing with the fact that they didn't come to terms with their sexuality when they were young, that have said to me, it would have been helpful if I'd have known there was a caring adult. And I said, well, would you ask the teacher about what the flag meant? No, I just know that that flag means I'm safe in that site. Now, my kids, I don't think would need that support of a visual representation of safety. Not all of our kids have the same needs. So to say, yeah, it's blanket, everybody had, you know, treat everybody the same, I wish we could say everybody and every child's needs are the same. They're not. Some students need more support, whether that be a visual 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. Who am I to say, if that teacher feels that's going to help that? I don't believe the teacher's up there talking about it every day. They're not. It's a picture on the door to the classroom. Not the front door of the school. It's on the door of the classroom. And we know right now that how many do we have in the whole district elementary classrooms? 6 or 7?
25% of the district.
No.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Middle and high school.
Well, of the
middle
district.
Middle and high school. I'm talking about elementary. Okay,
oh, yeah.
I'm talking about elementary, that's fine, and I should have clarified
Sorry.
That. The other thing is we talk about the core curriculum. You know, as a classroom teacher, yeah, core curriculum was what guided most of my time in the classroom. But as a teacher, I felt a responsibility to go beyond the nuts and the bolts of economics and personal finance. I was hoping my students would get out of it things beyond the core curriculum. How to be compassionate, how to collaborate with someone, how to be kind, how to respectfully disagree, how to be respectful. And I didn't necessarily see that in the U.S. Board of Education curriculum for Econ 1500. But do I think I had an obligation as a teacher to teach those skills and model those skills? Yeah. So I respectfully disagree that it goes beyond the core curriculum in the classroom.
Well, there's no question, Larry, that there are social aspects to what...
But
you can't change the simple every time there's a difference.
But that's
kind of what we're talking about.
Well, here's...
You didn't put a simple up once in 36 years.
I didn't have a student come to me looking for the symbol.
You view the symbol
as an analytical symbol. I view the symbol as a symbol of safety.
That's exactly what we said, and that's the disagreement we have. That's exactly what we said in our statement. Is that and these images all have multiple causes.
Exactly.
And interpretations.
And I didn't say I disagreed with that. What I disagree with is we limit that to just secondary schools.
Well, and I want to make sure that we're at least allowing it in secondary schools, because the conversation I'm hearing here is, do we even have it? And when I hear an Amy Anderson tell us the need for the ability as a counselor to communicate, to have a sign, to have a something, and you get into middle and secondary school, and most of the email we're receiving, and even what I think I'm hearing from some board members is, we shouldn't have any of these.
And
that concerns me.
It does.
I do think it'd be good for us to remember this conversation will work better if we don't talk over one another.
And one other point, you know, I've had public, you know, comments, it's a job of the counselor. Well, in reality, folks, we don't have counselors in every elementary school. That's the reality of the situation. So who becomes the counselor? Frank's wife does as an elementary teacher. My wife did for 30 years as a first grade and kindergarten teacher. The administrator does. So to say, oh, go down to the counselor, unless we're willing to fund in this state enough money to get elementary counselors, and then the problem is there aren't enough people qualified to fill those positions. It falls on the teacher to deal with that. And now how the teacher does that is part of our discussion. But as you know, I believe that the teacher, I trust the teacher if a parent or a student comes to them and expresses a need and said, you know, I don't know if I feel supported, what can you do to help me? And if that includes a sign, I don't have a problem with that personally. I know some of you do. But the fact that there hasn't been one kindergarten student ask about the meaning of the sign to the teacher in the classroom tells me something. And I know very well that there's not a teacher we've got that's indoctrinating. That's like to say if I see the BYU flag, I'm indoctrinated to support BYU, and Greg supports
you.
I should be, yeah. But I'm not going to support BYU just because I see the flag. So I'm very emotional about this, and I know all of you are, and I respectfully disagree with a lot of this. But my life experience and my core values lead me to where I'm at today. So thanks for listening.
So where are we?
I don't know if we're
anywhere. Right back where we started.
Exactly.
We haven't made any progress. So what steps do we take now to try to move forward?
You know, one possible way would be to actually move this to when it's a discussion item or an action item, that we do like the delegate assembly, that you make a motion. I agree with paragraph one, paragraph two, and that the five bullets, how many can agree with that, and you make a motion to that. And then, you know, and then we actually, or I move that we change this into a policy.
Yeah,
and the board vote, you know, if there's no second to it, then it moves on. But I almost wonder if we have to go back to parliamentary procedure and see what we can agree on and what we can't agree on. If it's, you want a policy, then the policy committee works on a policy. If that's not what it is, and then as part of the policy committee, I would ask, and what in this statement would you want to be in a policy? Can we agree on everything in black? Can we agree on, what do we agree with in the red? What about the final paragraph? what amendments would you want to make? And we do it similar to what we do with the delegate assembly, where we wordsmith and we take time and we hash out what we believe, because I am hearing such different things. I don't know where we are. And I read an email and think, oh, I can see your point. And then I read this one and think, I can see this point, but what about this and what about this and how do we? And I think we are in a real stalemate as a board, and unless we start saying, this is, make a motion and stand behind those things, and we go on record what we support, what we don't support, with votes, with amendments.
That's a good approach. Yeah.
Which includes compromise.
Which includes compromise. Sure. But I think then we're also doing, it's in a regular meeting, we're doing the public's meeting in public, and we hash out, people know, okay, Anne agrees on this, these people don't agree on this, this motion was made, it had no second, and perhaps we can move from our stalemate.
The decision between statement and policy, and then what's the content of the statement of policy? Mm-hmm. Because you know my feelings, I believe the statement's sufficient and no exclusions, K through 12. That's where I'm at. But like you said, there's got to be compromise. I think a policy paints us into a corner. That's just my belief. But all five of us have to come to decision. And as we've all talked about, we've got other things on the table that need to, not to minimize the importance of this, but we can't shove off to the side all the other things we're responsible for.
Nor make it appear that this is the only important thing the board's working on all year.
Yeah, exactly.
Or that we are listening, you're not listening, that kind of thing.
So it is on the agenda tonight as an action item. So we could think, you know, what...
I think we're ready to take any action.
Well, if we wanted to take the direction of, do we want this to be a policy or a statement? If we wanted to start making some motions, we do have space on the agenda tonight to do that. If the board wanted to take more time to think about that individually, so then we identify, okay, come prepared to our next meeting to do some of that. We can, you know, it's on the agenda tonight, so we have space, but it can't be tabled. So to give us a little more time to prepare for the next discussion. So whatever,
which is in a month.
Yeah, which is next month,
December
15th. 13th. So
13th.
And the last, I would like to get it done this year.
We're going to start working on it.
So we do have time on the agenda to have some discussion with it tonight, to work with it, or we could delay it for our next meeting and come prepared to make all those motions and really dig in.
You know, I think that's probably a very wise way to start. I mean, I definitely think that we have to start somewhere. And I think it's just like we've said, you know, there's contention in the staff. Obviously, we need to do something so that we can get back to educating kids. And whatever that is, wherever we land, we need to get back to doing the other business of the district. I do think that, because the few parents that I talk to as well, and it kind of goes back to Larry's comment about the no one's made a fuss about it but parents. But I think that the critical part about it is I don't think many parents know. So if we do allow that, we need to somehow communicate that to parents so that they can have those conversations, hopefully with their children. Because we know that parents aren't in secondary classrooms, ever. When's the last time a parent went to a secondary classroom to visit? Because you have parent-teacher conferences not in the classroom anymore. So generally, parents usually aren't like mingling in, they're not going into classrooms where those signs are being displayed. So how do we know and how can we verify that our parents even know that these signs are up there? They may not even know. And I'm not saying they do or don't, because I don't know. I don't know. The parents that I've talked to haven't, didn't know that there was even an issue with the signs being up. So if you have parents who aren't coming into schools, they don't even, and the kids who aren't saying anything, then there's a disconnect between it being displayed or whatever being displayed and what's being communicated to parents.
Going back to the comments, this thing seems like it's just got so blown up.
Yeah.
I mean, that teacher did not, I mean, she has not indoctrinated these kids about that sign. And my evidence of that is she had my grandson in her class with this sign, and he did not know anything about it, and nor did his parents. It was that innocuous in her situation. And she, when you talk to her, her whole intent was that she found out that she did have a child in her class that had moved on, and a few years later in that same school, it found out that that sign, if she put that sign up, she would have felt safe, and so she put the sign up. But it wasn't even when the kid was in her class, in my understanding, to just say, hey, if there's a kid out there that needs this, I want to make sure I'm not missing somebody. And we've taken that from a chance to try to help somebody to now we're divided us, it's divided our community, mm-hmm. It's divided our school teachers, yeah. It's divided our administration. You can just go on and on and on.
Yeah,
you
know? It's true.
And the horrible thing about it is both sides are getting ourselves into where we're getting ourselves labeled. And the worst thing in the world is to start labeling people. I mean, I have not a lot of background, but I have some friends that struggle with same-sex attraction. And the last thing they've told me they want me to do is start labeling. They do not want to be called that. And I stop and think about that. The first thing they tell me is you can't understand my situation, and they're right. I mean, the mistake you always make when you start talking to somebody, yeah, I understand. You don't. We do not understand their situation. There is no way. But the last thing I want to be is labeled as heterosexual. I don't want to go around in life being identified as heterosexual. There's more to me than that. There's more to somebody than being labeled by your sexual preference or gender. The society has driven that, Frank, to where maybe it is completely out of control, and it's destroying people, and it's creating these huge diverse divisiveness between us all, and somehow we've got to send a message that this community is bigger than that. We don't have to worry about this. We can deal with it. Our families can deal with their teaching the moral values that they want to teach. We aren't going to teach those in school. That teacher has not taught that in her classroom. My grandson is an example of that. So I just can't understand why this has become such a huge issue, other than it's driven by things that are destroying our society, and we just can't let it keep going that way.
Are you going to make a comment?
Yeah.
I requested this 2 board meetings ago, but I do not think we're being helped by public comment at this point. And I don't want to say that in the wrong way, but I think we would be advantageous to not have public comment in a meeting or 2 while we go through this. That is just beating exactly what Greg is talking about. Strong opinions, strong positions, philosophies that unfortunately are taking us further apart than more together. We've had plenty of feedback. We've had emails every day, and that's okay. But I think for the public comment part, I think it would be advantageous close that off for a couple of meetings so we can just focus on the business. That's just a suggestion.
We would need to amend our procedures that the board has adopted.
Which I think would warrant a conversation about public comment. Because when it used to be someone representing a group, they would say, I'm representing this group of 20 people who are in the audience today. So it was a means to say, the 20 of us that are here are being, this is our spokesperson. But now they're saying I'm representing a group, but we don't know who they are. So I would think that we would want to potentially amend that anyway to just make it all individual and give everybody the same opportunity. That way you could have, it wouldn't be so, or, you know, yeah, you could up the time frame for an individual, which would be fine, or make it 5 minutes for each individual.
Or do 3 minutes for everybody.
Yeah, but I think that we need to take out the group, or else we need to have the group definition defined, like those 20 people that you're representing have to be here at board meeting today. So.
Yeah. I'm not sure, since it's not on the agenda to do that.
Oh no!
That we could not do that today.
In the future,
our rules of procedure. Well, we would need to do it today, and we'd need to do it at our next meeting.
I know, but people, we said we'd accept public comment. And now they show up. We can know what I think we're just going to do.
We have sign-ups already through to January, so...
We've got people signed up through January.
How far out can we make that motion?
I would think in the next board meeting, we could have it on the agenda and say, until this issue is resolved, we won't be having public comment, but that would take next board meeting, and it would be in January before we would not have public comment.
I think that's okay. I mean, we just went to training, so it's not required.
Yeah, it is not required.
It's not required. So it's just like a change of the calendar, which we do all the time.
But it's
very important.
Yeah.
Making a motion.
I think it's something we can discuss in leadership meeting tomorrow, because we've got to adjourn the work session and move into our regular session. We'll start at 5.
There's nothing that really limits us from scheduling some additional board meetings.
That's true.
That was only 30% serious.
I was just going to say.
It is on the
table. I think you should. Come on.
I'm going to have in the minutes where I leapt across the table and strangled the
secretary. We can call more meetings and get this done.
We should do 4 or 5 more. Come on. Let's do one day.
Well, you know, and that's the thing. I would rather meet and get this resolved than to not meet and have it be the only issue and actually get something done.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to have a day-long work session.
I think that's.
But then we would need an action meeting sometime.
Maybe we need a day-long work session before board meeting.
A work session next week or something could happen. Think about next week. after next week.
Good Friday.
Yeah, what's happening next Friday?
Are we adjourned then?
We're adjourning the work session.
Okay, 4:48.